Play something different tonight.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Paramahansa Paramitakacharya, all Sutada Sutashi Shimad, His Divine Grace, Abhayachananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrindi Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Huyadas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Sekaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasani Gaur Bhakta Vrindikachai. Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopi Gopinath Shyam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Mathuradam Kijai Jagannatha Swami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Shivani Lasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Premananda. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Namini. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nevashesha Shunyavadi Paschata Deja Tarani Omaganata Mirandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshun Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Nohani. You gonna go play? Okay, you can play. We'll call you if we need you, all right? Go have a good time. You play the drum great. Wow. I'm going to take you away with me. No more school. We could just play all the time. And I'll buy you gallons of ice cream every day. How about that? Don't have to go to school. You have as much ice cream as you want, any flavor you want. Sound good?
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to start this class today by reading from Srila Prabhupada's, well, quotes from Srila Prabhupada about compassion. So, Chanaka Pandit gives the standard for education or the qualification of a Pandit in this way. The learned man, The learned man sees all women, with the exception of his wife, as his mother. He sees all material possessions, garbage in the street. And he looks on the sufferings of others as he would look on them himself. Maybe they can close the door or something. If there's a door. Oh, they're going outside, okay. The natives are restless. This is a quote from Prabhupada. Lord Buddha taught that we should not even hurt animals by word or deed. This is the qualification for a pundit, and this should be the standard of life. It is therefore to be understood that one is to be considered educated in accordance with his vision of life and his activity in accordance with that vision. In other words, that's Prabhupada's standard of education. Compassion rather than some university education. Not his academic degrees, that's exactly what Prabhupada says. Those who are too self-interested beg something from others, not knowing of others' pain. But if the beggar knew the difficulty of the giver, he would not ask for anything. Similarly, he who is able to give charity does not know the beggar's difficulty, for otherwise he would not refuse to give the beggar anything he might want in charity. So I'll just read the purport. This is from the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This verse describes two people, one who gives charity and one who begs for it. A beggar should not ask charity from a person who is in difficulty. Similarly, one who is able to give charity should not deny a beggar. These are the moral instructions of the Shastra. Chanaka Pandit says, and it gives some Bengali, everything within this material world will be destroyed, therefore one should use everything for a good purpose. If one is advanced in knowledge, he must always be prepared to sacrifice anything for a better cause. At the present moment, the entire world is in a dangerous position under the spell of a godless civilization. The Krishna consciousness movement needs many exalted, learned persons who will sacrifice their lives to revive Krishna consciousness throughout the world. We therefore invite men and women advanced in knowledge to join the Krishna consciousness movement and sacrifice their lives for the great cause of reviving God consciousness of human society. So this course is about compassion and empathy. And one thing I wanted to make clear is that empathy and compassion are built into the psyche not only of human beings, but of animals, of every living entity. And one story I often tell in the beginning of the seminar is the story of a scuba diver, a lady who was scuba diving or skin diving, one of the two. And she was going under the water, and she felt this whale or porpoise or something like that kept pushing her, pushing. She's wondering, why is this animal bothering me? And then after a while, she looked out, and she saw that there was a shark on the other side. And this animal was protecting her from the shark. Of course, I'm not going to talk about the shark's empathy. Shark was just hungry. He had a need for food. And the person was the food. So it's natural with everybody to feel empathy or compassion for others. And so we're going to talk about why this compassion is covered up. You know, why don't we feel it? Why do we feel like killing people or angry with people or hateful towards people? Or why do we have enemy images? And why are we not loving? And so there's many different reasons for that. I mean, one is the society that we're brought up in. We're actually trained to think like Prahlad Maharaj was thinking or being trained in his school, to think of friends and enemies. This is, if you're aware of the Bhagavatam, the description of the Bhagavatam, the Prahlad Maharaj, what's that in the background, that little noise? Was that Prabhupada chanting? Yeah, I knew something was happening. Something spiritual was happening. So getting back to the point. So we are trained to think in terms of friends and enemies. And not only that, our language trains us to think in terms of putting labels on people. Like last night we went through this whole exercise of labels. You know, what do we think of ourselves? What do we think of others? And how this disconnects us from ourselves. But even more so than all these different types of training that we have, we are brought up in what I call, and Marshall Rosenberg also called, because a lot of the stuff I'm teaching comes from Marshall Rosenberg, adapted to Krishna consciousness. And we are brought up in what's called a domination culture. And this is actually very interesting. It's a culture in which we are trained up like pet dogs or porpoises. I don't know if you've ever been to the Sea World or, and you see these porpoises or dolphins or whatever they are jumping through hoops and everything like that. Well, and then as soon as they jump through a hoop, what happens? They give them some fish. You'll hear some fish and he goes, wow. That is called, in psychology, Pavlovian training. Anyone's heard of Pavlov? Before, he's a famous psychologist. And he believed, basically, he probably didn't believe that people had any feelings, but he was just interested in the external manifestations of behavior. And so he thought you can get anyone to behave in any way by rewards. He wasn't that much in favor of punishments. He said rewards are much more effective. If you read his books, he talks about that. So you can train people up like dogs, and then they will behave themselves. And it doesn't matter how they feel. It really doesn't matter, according to him. That's not me speaking. It really doesn't matter how they feel as long as they act nicely, they behave themselves. How many times you've heard children told that by their parents? Behave yourselves. Oh, you've heard that? Yourself in your childhood or your own children? Should have brought them in the room. Anyway, behave yourselves. We have guests coming. And then you think, oh my God, I hate these guests, you know. So today, for the first time, they had a guest who told them not to behave themselves. So they say, there, he's a really cool sannyasi. You know, we want more of him to stay. Because normally, you know, Mars is here. Don't talk. Be quiet. Behave yourself. Okay. And as long as you behave yourself, you get plenty of ice cream tomorrow. So we are actually trained up like that. You know, rewards and punishment. That's called the domination culture. You know, we're fearful. You know, why do I Last night I talked about speeding. So why do I observe the speed limit now? Does anyone know? Because I'm fearful of getting caught. Not because I respect the speed limit or I know the need for it or I think it's a safety factor. You know, instead of explaining to me that, you know, you have to be concerned with people's safety in an empathic way, don't you love people, you know, don't you want to keep people safe? Instead, I'm not speeding because I am fearful. So I've been trained up like a trained porpoise or a dolphin to not speed. Anyway, talked about that yesterday. So really, that's our whole culture. And the punishments that we give people are simply for training, not even to bring people to the proper consciousness. I mean, I remember, oh my God, I hate to mention this, I'm going to mention it. In one temple in ISKCON, well, what they do is if you don't show up in time for Mangal Arati, you have to write the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra out, how many times? 108 times. You get writer's cramp after writing that many times. And you can't use your computer and just cut and paste. That's it. That's what I would do. You get a macro, you know. You know what a macro is. You just, okay. Said 100. So what that does is it actually disconnects people from Mangal Arati. The whole purpose of Mangal Arati. The purpose of Mangal Arati is not so just so you wake up early and you dance to entertain your relatives or your, you know, your teacher or something like that, or your guru or whatever. The purpose is to connect you with Krishna and the spiritual master. I mean, so we get away from the purposes of doing things, you know, the why of doing things. What's that? We got a problem? Oh, your laptop.
I'm monitoring on the Zoom.
Okay, Houston, we have a problem, you know. As I said, you know. Anyway, so we get away from the purpose of doing things, and we just get into the what and how instead of the why, which is really takes the life out of us. We just get into the what and the how. And then we end up doing things ritualistically. Like Prabhupada one time jokingly said, wake me up when my rounds are done. Not wake me up, he didn't say that. The devotees say that. He said, I've finished my 16 rounds, now I can do any damn thing. So devotees say, wake me up when my rounds are done. You know, so Prabhupada would never say that. But Prabhupada was actually emulating us, where we do things because we're supposed to. And we're supposed to do it because we're afraid. You know, hopefully we're afraid of Maya, but usually we're afraid of what, getting chastised or whatever. I remember when I first joined the movement, I was told, you just have to eat the prasadam in the temple. So me and the other devotees would sneak out. We would actually sneak out and get other things to eat. And we're afraid of getting caught. And that actually, the same thing happened in 26th Second Avenue. I wasn't there at that time. But the devotees would eat at the donut shop that was next door, or the coffee shop, whatever. And whenever Prabhupada would walk down past it, they would slink down in their chairs so Prabhupada wouldn't see them. So they were doing it out of fear. Of course, being afraid of Prabhupada's displeasure is probably a pretty good thing. But still, it disconnects them from the activity. So basically, we're doing all of our devotional activities, not we, but unfortunately most of our devotional activities are being done because we're afraid or we want some reward. But we're actually disconnected from the activity itself. And the activity itself is, you know, Krishna, what is it, Namachintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, Punashida Nuchin Mukto, Binatvam Nama Namino, that the name of Krishna is not different from Krishna. We're connecting with Krishna. Krishna's dancing on the tip of our tongues. So that's really what we should be thinking. We should be thinking or remembering the Shikshashnika prayers when we chant. Not, I have to get these rounds done, just like every time you move down a bead, you feel a sense of relief. I mean, the counter beads. You feel a sense of relief. Isn't it? Oh my God, how many more beads are I? And sometimes we even pull the beads out of our bead bag to see how many more are left in this round. Isn't it?
Yes.
How many more? Oh my God, I thought I've been chanting for so long. It's going so slow. You know, so this is all disconnect. It's actually from what I call the domination culture. And, you know, this pervades not only religious societies, it also pervades secular society, why we do what we're doing. And so, therefore, we're not connected to the heart. So oftentimes I open up this particular seminar by making this statement, which really bewilders people. I said, I can teach you how to become Krishna conscious without having to chant your rounds, without having to follow the four regulator principles, without having to rise early, without having to chant Hare Krishna. And people go, my God, sounds pretty good. He's giving us an easy path. Oh. Hari Bol, we missed you. Okay. So, yes, so usually I say that as what we call a... Okay, let everybody come in. As what we call a whiffim. Whiffim means what's in it for me. Because you're supposed to offer a whiffim at the beginning of every seminar just to entice people. That, you know, yeah, now I can become Krishna conscious without following those stupid rules and regulations anymore. So, but then I clarify it by stating that you still follow the rules and regulations, but you do them because you choose to do them. And you choose to do them for some purpose that's important to you. And you choose to chant your rounds. And the interesting thing is, about this choosing business, is that I can't tell you what your motivation should be or is. That has to come from the heart. And usually in a modern society, and society in general, we function on the brain level. I'm choosing to do this because this will please my spiritual master. But maybe you're not interested in that. So, or maybe you are. I'm not saying you're not, but maybe you are interested in that. But really what you say with your words from your brain are oftentimes not what's in your heart. You say, I'm choosing this because I just want to please Krishna. No, you don't want to please Krishna. You know, people think highly of themselves. My only desire is to please you. Nanma janmani jadmani shre bhavatad bhakti haitukhi tvaye. We hear devotees say that, you know, I have no desire for this and I have no desire for that. And I say, just be honest. You want all those things. And therefore, Krishna in the Bhagavatam, or not Krishna, but the Bhagavatam states, Alkama, Moksha Kama, Sarva Kama, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, Yajeta Purusham Param. That whatever one desires, one should worship Krishna, but one should be honest about one's desires. Of course, not too enthusiastic about your desires, or else you end up like Draupadi, who wanted a husband, but she asked too enthusiastically. Right? She said, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband, and I want a husband. And Lord Shiva said, yeah, you get five of them. Yeah. So just, you know, just one time. So anyway, so that's what empathic communication is, being connected with your heart. I'm motivated by your heart and always asking yourself the question, why am I doing things? That's really important. And this question, why, is so important to understand your motivation. And now we're talking about motivation. I remember one time I went to the university and I was studying. I took a course in motivations. They didn't teach me anything. And then ultimately I learned through studying empathic communication that people are motivated with the desire to fulfill needs. I mean, that's really what motivates everybody. And even people who appear to be like the meanest people in the world are just trying to fulfill basic needs. I mean, even people we call demons. I mean, here's Robin, for example. Robin was actually a devotee. And why did he kidnap Sita Devi? You could say, he was a demon. Yes, he was a demon. But anyway, but you're labeling him. We talk about these four D's of discommunication. You're diagnosing him. Yeah, he did act like a demon. But in reality, we know he wasn't a demon. Well, he was the Lord's devotee. And in reality, we know that that nobody's a demon. Of course, as aspiring second-class devotees, we have to distinguish between the innocent, the envious, the devotees, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, obviously. I mean, that's on the external platform. But we're not supposed to hate anybody. The Issa Upanishad states, Yastu sarvani bhutani atman ayivana pashati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tato vigigupshate, that a devotee sees everybody connected to Krishna. He doesn't hate anyone or hate anything. So how do we see someone like Ravan? You know, certainly Lord Ram, at the end, he didn't consider him a demon. Even though, you know, he fought with him and everything like that. But Ram, of course, Ram was just playing with him. This is that whole story in the Ramayana when in the early days of the battle, Ravan actually came out and Ram defeated him. And Ram said, you look really tired, you better go back and rest, come back another day. Remember that? That's a really interesting part of the Ramayana. So he is a bewildered spirit soul who is looking for some strategy to fulfill his need. So let's do a guessing game here, some little interaction. What do you all think Robin's needs were?
Prestige.
Need? Prestigious need?
Work.
What?
Power. Respect and power.
Respect. Power is not a need. Power is not a need. That's a strategy to achieve a need. But respect, wanting to be respected, wanting to be appreciated. Oh, get his microphone out. I don't think that one microphone works, does it? No. No. No, it doesn't work. So, what's that?
Recognition? You want to recognize the most
important? That's not really a need to be recognized the most important. You know, appreciation, love. He had, of course, he's kidnapped Sita Devi, so he had a need for beauty. But really, he was frustrated. I mean, anybody who brags about themselves like that, what? Lankapati, Sitapati, Patipati, whatever he said about himself. Jagatpati. You know, anyone who brags about themselves is insecure. So he has a need for security. And so the poor guy, as we hear, you know, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kam Sakalaya Shanta, the poor guy was actually miserable because he had uncontrolled senses. And that's mentioned in the Bhagavatam about several demons that, you know, they were able to conquer the whole universe, but they weren't able to conquer their senses. So here is someone who is suffering like anything, and he's employing a strategy. Remember, these words I'm using. He's employing a strategy to fulfill his needs, and the strategy is not such a good strategy, especially when you go to kidnap Sita Devi, and you get Maya Sita, who's Durga. And he became more miserable because of that, and more anxiety because of that. But actually, he was acting to fulfill his needs. If you look at everyone like that, I'm not saying that we do away with criminal justice or anything, but if you look at everybody like that, you're not going to hate them. You're going to see them struggling. And actually, in one sense, everybody is looking for Krishna, but they're just looking in the wrong place, like that story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know the story about the man who has an astrologer to the astrologer. The man's father has died. You know another story? And the astrologer says, your father left you a lot of money, but you just have to look in the right place. You know, in one place you look, there's a yaksha. You remember that story? Like in personalism. And, you know, I don't remember all the details of the story, but if you look in the east, you'll find the wealth. So basically, people are looking. They don't know they're looking for Krishna. They're looking to have a loving propensity. And like Prabhupada said in the Krishna book, that people who invest their loving propensity in material objects are like shining a light inside a box. And Prabhupada said, if you shine a light out in the sky, it goes on unlimitedly, and you shine in a box, it just like hits the edge of the box at a certain point. But people really have these needs, these deep-seated needs, and they're struggling to fulfill them, and that's empathic communication. Everyone at all times is struggling to fulfill their needs, both spiritual and material needs. And as we mentioned yesterday, that every one of us has all those needs. And for some of us, some of those needs are more prominent than other needs. For some of us, Krishna consciousness is not so prominent. And we have a need for food. Oh, Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda, should we say on Janava Mata? Yeah, when people get initiated, they should always call the husband and wife in terms of their the spiritual relationship. So anyway, so where's Vamsi Dari going now? He's going to get some other cable or something like that. So anyway, so we have these needs, and so what's disconnecting us from this are these four, what we call four Ds. Oh, there's the TV. What happened with the TV now?
The Zoom call is still going up.
Someone unplugged the TV. Zoom call is going on, but the TV is not going on. Vamsi Dari, we need you. I think you have to turn the TV on. You got to use the remote control and turn the TV on. All you got, it's plugged in, but you have to use the remote control.
No.
The TV is plugged in, but you need to turn the TV on. There it is. There it is. And then you have to use the remote control to set it to the... It might go automatically to the right thing. Let's just give it a second. Sorry for everybody online. What are you doing? What are you doing? Just if you would just stay here, everything would be all right.
I think the internet was choppy.
Internet's not working?
Choppy. But it should be fine.
No, what did you do?
Ethernet cable.
The internet cable?
Oh, the wireless is a little fast. So
oh, my God.
Something stopped.
Yeah, the internet cable is plugged in now, and we're still on. Okay. Let me just make sure it's all...
I just think it's all fine.
Okay. Fine there. Okay. Okay. Can everyone just... Okay, yesterday we went over all the negative labels and everything like that we use in this. What?
He just labeled me Kayadu.
Kayadu. Well, there's nothing wrong with Kayadu.
There's nothing wrong with Kayadu. I also say this to you. There's another question for those.
She got the Association of Narada Muni.
Well, yes, I'm the fortunate one.
Okay, so things were working just fine. Okay. All right. So what should we do? Go over the blocks of communication again, or just go on to something new today? Something new? Okay. Let's go. Yesterday we did the blocks of communication, and we also did the steps of empathic communication. Okay. So let's talk about relationships. How about that? Okay. So, the major point in relationships is to connect with the other person, because we all need connections. That's a major need. Connections with others, and actually connection with ourselves. And the main strategy to achieve connection is called presence. And that doesn't mean Christmas presents, birthday presents, or anything like that, but being present with someone. And it doesn't mean having a certain posture. So many of you might have taken a counseling course where they taught you to sit in a certain way when you're talking to someone like that. But it's a question of consciousness. You can sit in any way and be present with someone. You could be sitting back like that, or like that, or playing with your glasses like I do. But the whole point is to be present for the other person, just to hear what they're saying, and to try to understand their needs, and to focus what's there right now for them at present. It's really important to be in the presence, present when you're dealing with someone. You know, many people, many therapists, they try to go to the past, and sometimes we dwell on that a little bit, but it's not so important what happened in the past 10 years ago with your parents or anything like that. The important thing is, how do you feel now and what your needs are now? And we let people know, when we connect them, we're there for them. And we hear there are different feelings. We're talking about feelings and needs, like we talked about with this chart yesterday. We hear, we observe what they're saying, and then we try to understand their feelings and their needs, and we may give them a suggestion, but we never tell them what to do. Because telling someone what to do interferes with their basic, with the demand, with their basic need for having autonomy, making their own decisions in life. So we try to help them understand their feelings and needs. And helping people understand their feelings and needs, sometimes we guess at it. And that's not bad. You know, sometimes when I'm talking to people, some of you have heard me do, I will guess I said, it sounds like you have a need for food. And they'll say no. But they appreciate that you're interested in finding out what their needs are. The whole point is that you're interested in their needs. You're interested because the need is the basic motivation behind everything. Remember that. the needs, the basic needs, as we talked about yesterday, basic shelter needs, basic bodily needs, the need for interconnectedness, the need for fun, the need for play, the need for recreation, the need for friendship, the need for love, and ultimately the need to have a meaning in life and Krishna consciousness. So that motivates everything. So we try to be empathic with that, and if you're actually counseling someone, you may guess at it. Or you may guess at it with your bodily language. It's not that you have to say anything to be empathic with someone. That's often misunderstood, that people think you have to talk. And sometimes silence is actually the best thing, although we are very uncomfortable with silence. You know, you sit with two people and it's very uncomfortable, isn't it? You know, you're sitting, even a husband and wife, they're sitting. Say something. Of course, that's not a problem with the wife, so anyway. The husband is usually, can I say something? Right? And then finally he says something and the wife says, you never listened. sometimes silence is very good empathy. You know, like if someone is grieving, you don't have to... Well, empathy is not saying I feel sorry for you anyway. That's about you. Empathy is getting in touch with their feelings and needs, and maybe something, so you just hold their hand or something like that and let them cry. I mean, expressions of emotion and being vulnerable are very good. I mean, there's nothing wrong... Well, I don't want to say this. Nothing wrong with crying, anyway. Except in marriages. So, there's a funny story. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur cried one time when he was giving one of his disciples sannyas, and the disciple was taken away by his wife. So he started crying. Anyway, so that's empathy. And you can actually enjoy that connection, because the real point is to connect to people, not to make them do anything, not to make them feel any particular way, just to connect. That's actually a very joyful thing. Okay. Here's an exercise. I'll play the part of someone who's depressed. How about that? That's the most difficult role for me. So... All right, and see who wants to be a counselor. Anyone want to volunteer to be a counselor here? Okay, volunteer. Yeah, you volunteered. Whether you know it or not, you volunteered. We do that in the GBC meeting, too. You know, anyone want to volunteer? Oh, yeah, so-and-so, you volunteered. So, all right. How would you react to me if I say, okay, let me get in the mood. I'm very depressed. Life is just worthless. I feel like ending it all. Of course, I'm not going to do it, but I feel like ending it all. There's no value to my life. I can't wake up in the morning. I have no impetus to do anything. What would you say?
How are you feeling?
Depressed! I mean, I already told you how I was feeling. Yeah. This is going to be funny.
So, following the
procedure.
Procedure.
Where is the procedure? I don't see it. Observation. Oh, yeah, there is. Yeah. Well, not, no, there's procedures up there.
Yeah, but I'm guessing the needs.
Okay.
Help you understand your needs, which need that
all right.
you think you did not meet.
Which need? To be, need to be unhappy. That's a, then it's like then you're like a detective. You know, that's really that's not empathy. You just say, which need do you think you have? There's several ways. Normally people do. Don't be unhappy. That's another way. Now I'm angry too. Not only unhappy. It'll be okay. You know. Take two pills and call me in the morning. How would you deal with it? That's a hard one. Okay. All right.
Is your help doing good?
No. Yes, I mean, I don't know. I'm so depressed, I couldn't care less anyway.
So, I asked because...
This is a hard one.
Start with the bodily needs, so... Yeah, body needs.
No, well, see, you're still in the inquisitor stage, and people don't need that. What they need, basically, in a situation like that, is not a question. What they need is empathy. You know, that basically you'd come up to them and, you know, is there anything I can do? And then they may get angry with that. Would you like to talk? I'm here for you. These are different things you say to them. But at this point, you don't say, you're feeling depressed, do you have a need for whatever, you know, for self-satisfaction? Interconnect, appreciation. But you guess in your mind at that need. And after they've cool down a little bit, then you could say, you know, say things like, I'm here for you. And then you're answering, seeing if they, by saying that, you're seeing if they have a need for care or connection. Because usually the basic need that people have is for connection. When people say, I am depressed, they're trying to communicate something. That's connection. So then to assure them, I'm here for you. Like that really assures them in a case like that. That's a hard one. Anyway, let's see. Oh, yeah, well, another point I want to make here according to my teacher's manual is that not to confuse sympathy with empathy. Sympathy focuses on yourself. And empathy focuses on the other person. Sympathy is how I feel. I feel bad for you. You know, if someone passes away in someone's family, you don't want to say, you know, I feel really bad about him passing away, or I feel bad for you. I would usually say that was really traumatic. Mm-hmm. Whoops, whose phone is that? Oh, your phone. I would guess, let's see, if someone lost a loved one, I would usually guess at the feeling first. That sounds really traumatic. That's really sad. Rather than saying, you must be sad, you must be traumatic, because that's rather threatening. You're sort of like telling them what they must be or what they should be in such a circumstance. But then you're actually opening it up to you and the other person. You're actually connecting to the other person by saying that in a general term without using the personal pronoun. That sounds really traumatic. That's heart-wrenching. Because if I say you must be traumatized, you must be in pain. It's just like, it's not really connecting, it's just me and you again. But connecting means to empathize with their particular feelings or needs. So you would use it, or without getting to the personal pronoun there. And also, another thing is when you're dealing with someone, don't try fixing or correcting or giving advice or even saying, I understand. Because usually if you say understand, I understand, the person will say, you don't understand, or think you don't really understand. So empathy is really just connection with the other person. Okay. And let's see what else here. Okay, we can do some exercise. Let's see. Let's get down to exercises. Okay, let's do pairs. Everybody face the person next to them. And take... What's that?
The Zoom people are in breakout groups?
How can they be in breakout groups? You know, I'm not going to do breakout groups. That's too complicated right now to do. To break everybody out. There's over 40 people there. There's over 40 people on Zoom.
Yes, it's a couple of buttons.
No, let them just watch. Let them eat cake. So, all right, so here's the exercise. We break out in pairs. Each person will say something that's causing them distress, and the other person will empathize with them. Okay? Pairs means two by two. I just play a role or real or whatever you think.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody finished? I think all the men are finished and the women are talking. I can't get them to stop.
Yeah, oh, Himangi.
Yes.
Stop.
That's a demand.
Maharaj, it's a prayer.
That's what you think. Maharaj is a witness.
You are so abusive.
She, right?
Ma, thank you. Somebody who understands.
Thank you for empathizing with my agony.
This is getting dangerous.
You have a need for understanding.
I do.
You have a need for quiet.
Quiet. How did you know?
I have a need for quiet. All I hear is be quiet.
Because I understand your needs better than you.
Okay.
This is bad training.
Maharaj, you should have emphatic communication become emphatic communication.
Okay, so who wants to share first? Pass the microphone around, and anyone want it?
Then I'll sprint out my eyes so they can
share your experiences. Okay. Yeah, sure.
So I was on the listening side.
Okay.
And I have a need for peace. No, but I was on the listening side, and something that I've practiced for some time now is to listen.
Okay.
It doesn't work with my wife, but everybody else, it somewhat works. Anyway, what I was trying to get at, jokes apart, is that it's so interesting just to listen. Is very, very difficult because there's so much noise about. Oh, well, I was curious about that, and I was curious about the other thing, which is not necessarily connecting, it just satisfies my curiosity. And then there's this other voice that's wanting to fix his problem, right? So there's a curiosity piece that's behind, and then there's a fix-it, you know, voice that's saying, oh, yeah, you could do it this way the other next time, or do it, you know. All of these solutions coming in my head. And so it's really, really hard to just listen, connect with the feeling, connect with the need. And when I did that, you know, like, towards the end, you know, we were going into something a little more deeper as we were getting into needs. And he was a little confused because of trying to understand, why am I trying to be on time? Because the point was being on time here in the program. Why am I trying to be, what's so important to me that I want to be on time? Because he was losing it in the car. He was angry and anxious, and it was like really tough for him to handle. So we were able to get there. Thank God that I was able to talk to those other two monsters in the head and say, shut up, just listen to him, just connect with him.
Now, what need, oh, here's a deeper thing. You have these two monsters, you call them, in your head. So what needs do they represent? Your need to fix it. Or your needs to question more, you know. So we have to be empathic with monsters, too. You know, Marshall Rosenberg, when he teaches this, he calls them jackals. But you're supposed to be empathic with your jackals, with your judgments, with your desire to fix it. Why, what need are you trying to fulfill with?
So for me, one side of the curiosity is a strong need for knowing and knowledge, and because ultimately that is what makes me feel accomplished and superior in life, because that makes me feel, self-actualized.
So you're saying you have a need to feel better than others?
That, I think that's maybe on more on the surface. I think deeper than that.
Deeper than that was the need.
Is a need for acceptance.
Need for acceptance.
And the strategy is gaining knowledge.
That's good.
And the other flip side is, go ahead.
Do you feel that in our society that one is accepted not so much for who they are, but what they know and how much they have?
Absolutely.
So you think that that's influencing your desire for acceptance? You're seeing that knowledge is necessary to be accepted.
Yes.
It's a strategy.
I'm not
criticizing. I'm just saying this is the way we're trained. To be accepted, you have to be knowledgeable, right? So that's so really you just want acceptance for yourself. But you're obtaining knowledge is a strategy for acceptance. It's interesting. And some people just want knowledge for knowledge's sake, just interest, because they just want to find out things.
I think there's a mix there.
Yeah. It's not necessarily something that's like a demon or something like that. It's just like, that's a need. You know, some people have a real deep need to understand a lot of things, understand psychology and everything like that. All right, so then your other demon.
Monster,
demon, whatever, was actually desire to fix it. Can we be a little empathic with that monster?
I think the need there on one side there is a need for care and connection, naturally. And so that may want to come out, but it's not what will help the other person.
Yeah.
There's also a need for control.
Yeah.
And fix, you know, fix issues. I would need for fairness. You know, to me, as I was hearing that story, to me it was unfair to him that he started off on time, he had planned his whole trip, he was going to be here on time, but he didn't get here on time. And you know, to me, that I have a need for fairness and justice, and that's not fair.
Who interfered with him?
It must be Krishna.
The traffic.
I don't know what it is, but you know, so that the scenario didn't seem fair to me, and so my need for fairness.
Was being
triggered.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we gotta fix this.
Fix it. Okay, that's good. All right, and you'll notice also when you get in touch with a person's needs and feelings and you're able to deal with your own monsters like you did, you'll feel a relief of tension. Did you notice that? When you actually connect with someone, there's a palpable, I mean, that means you could feel it. There's like, that's how you know when you connect with someone. You actually feel,
yeah.
It like takes the air out of the balloon, so to speak.
There's a phrase by Alan Wolfert, the grief counselor. He talks about this, that you, it's a quote that I really like, is when you're spending time with someone, that you settle into your own self.
Mm.
And you, from your heart, you're being with them. So settling into your own self, like how you just said.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, you settle
that.
Satisfied, relieved, like that. Good. And how do you feel with the interaction?
I just said to Prabhu that I'm relieved and peaceful after sharing that. My emotions, still I was struggling with that higher emotions of anxiety and anger. But after sharing, I felt peaceful and those emotions subsided.
Now
more present focus.
Very good. Okay, thank you very much for sharing, both of you. So who else has some of the ladies? The Vaishnavis? Oh, we got two microphones now. That's pretty good. Just be careful, don't pull the TV over with all these wires.
Hare Krishna. When you were sharing about that, the connection being the fundamental, and you mentioned about presence, I was wondering, what does it mean to be present? And, you know, that was going on the back of my mind. And when we started this thing, I was sharing something. I immediately could, very palpably, as you were saying, I could feel Mataji's presence. She was just trying to be reflectively listening, but immediately I could feel that presence. And also the other thing I felt, I think, as Rinan Prabhu was sharing, Mataji didn't do much. It's just, oh, it must be painful, or it must be hard. Just these connecting words, it actually helped me to see the pain or whatever in the heart, like, separate from me, observe that, and that actually, I mean, I could literally feel that pressure off of my heart. It was very powerful.
Wow. Thank you for sharing. So what did she do, or what did she say exactly?
Yeah, what did
she say? You gotta try this on your husband sometime, yeah.
Actually, when it's something I learned from Krishna Leela Prabhu. She said that when you have these kind of interaction, especially like somebody sharing their heart and more like a counselor, mentor, she told me that exactly I used to suffer from what Jamuna Jeevan Prabhu shared, because you feel, oh, I know the solution, I know what the next step could be, you know, that keeps coming up. So she had told me that to be, when you're a counselor, it's not that you can fix something, but you're an instrument of Krishna. And you can become a transparent instrument of Krishna only if you keep your ego aside. So forget, you know, you have to forget what you know or what you think is a solution, but to just to be an instrument, to feel Krishna's presence, because basically Krishna is using you as an instrument to help the other, but it's not you. So whenever I get into this conversation, I just ground myself into that she taught me, that I want to be an instrument. So all I was, whatever she was sharing, I was attentively hearing, and I was, all I was saying is there something I can do for you? What can I do for you?
Mm.
And she said, just hearing itself is helping me.
Mm.
And then I said, just understand that I'm just a phone call away anytime, even if you don't want to talk on this topic, but you just want to speak or anything, I'm just a phone call away. So it was just that kind of a conversation.
Mm. Mm. Very nice. So I often compare this to resonating with someone else. And that's a musical term. Sometimes you have two strings on a guitar. This was my guitar. And they resonate with each other. For example, if I go like this, watch this. Hear that resonation? Because this last string is resonating at the same time as that, where I go like this. Well, it's not tuned properly. It's pretty interesting, isn't it? That's another string. I pluck this one, and this one is actually vibrating. And so you actually get in tune, it's like tuning an instrument, you get in tune with how the other person is feeling and needing without saying anything. You just resonate with them. You're there with them on that trip. You're completely, that's why I said, all it is complete and utter presence with someone. You're there with them. It's not about you and them, or you feeling sorry, or you analyzing them, or you, anything. It's just them. You're there. You're feeling their feelings. You're just with them. You're on the boat together. Does that make sense? Okay. One of the sharing, or maybe one or two other people sharing, other ladies, other Vaishnavis, or Vaishnavas. Anyone else? Okay. Yeah, that's another problem.
Ours was a short conversation. We didn't actually get into needs and that part just yet. I think the first was just to reflect back and acknowledge. I don't want to say the example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say it. Mohit said, you know, it's very distressing when our congregation is splintered like this.
Mm-hmm.
And from my side, I just paused. I didn't say anything. There was just moments of silence.
Mm-hmm.
And just acknowledgement was, yeah, it's very difficult when a group of people or a congregation splits like that.
Mm.
It's just acknowledging that, yes, that distress is there. And Mohit's face was, oh. And during my turn, I gave an example that, you know, we just came back from a international trip, so by this time I'm jet-lagged. So it's very difficult for me to keep awake, and you have to fight it.
Mm.
And his immediate response was, yeah, long trips can really take it out of you.
Yeah.
And the cue was, both of us were nodding our heads. I was saying and he was saying back. That is, you had taught us that as an example of when there is someone nodding in agreement, that there is some connection there.
Connection, yeah.
Otherwise the person is like, that's not what I meant. I mean, it was short, but it was very, like that, connecting very quickly.
Connection and communication.
Yes.
Very good. Very good. You know, body language is perhaps the most important thing, and tone of voice. You know, if he would have said it in a different way, without nodding, he was saying this. Yeah, it's actually quite difficult when one goes on an international trip. Then it's just very intellectual. It's very much in the head. But if you say, yeah, it sounds difficult going on international trips. Okay, anyone else want to share? One other person, one other group of devotees. Ladies?
Sharing a heart with anybody else, it's take courage, Maharaj. So you, when you open yourself up to other person, and you need a trust. So when I was on saying part, so I opened and I said to Mataji, and she listened really nicely, and she understand, and she did not try to fix it. And then in the end, you know, she holds my hand and tells me that I'm there for you. That means a lot.
Very nice. Okay.
I shared my challenge with my, daughter pet. So we have a new pet in the family, dog. So
that's okay.
So my daughter has a condition, you know, to send us her welcome sheet where she is allowed to go on bed and sofa and everywhere, and we are like. So that's the challenge I shared with Mataji. And Mataji heard properly, nicely, and I felt she's hearing it, and she tried to understand me. And then she got the need. What's my need in there? What I was missing, you know? My priority was human. I wanted to connect with my daughter, and I wanted to welcome that, not a dog, but in my, with some limits. But she find out my, what's my connection is, like I'm looking for, and that's why my anger is coming towards my daughter.
Because you need connection with your daughter? Or?
Yeah, that's what I'm missing, you know, because she's not coming. She wanted me to first, she just every time joked, you have to let her go everywhere, then I'm coming. So, everywhere
in the house.
Yeah, in the on the beds, on the sofa, and I don't know.
In the DD room and everything?
That's what she thinks.
All right. Takes a lot of empathy there, yeah. Okay. And so let's go to another chapter here, since we're just doing some exercises. And yesterday we talked a little bit about anger. And anger is a big one that we want to learn how to deal with. Not necessarily control, not necessarily suppress, not necessarily repress. So, remember what I said yesterday about anger? When you feel angry, anger should be kept front and center, and you should become aware of the anger even more. Not that you necessarily have to express the anger in such a way that it will cause you harm or cause someone else harm. So we look very deeply into the cause of anger, and we take responsibility for the anger. You know, we don't deny, like, you made me angry. You didn't listen to me, you made me angry. Like you say to your children when you're trying to instruct them. You didn't come to school on time, you made me angry. You didn't cook for me, you made me angry. Like that. So, anyway, so we take responsibility for our own anger. It's not caused by what someone else did or what someone else said. It's us, our needs that are not being fulfilled. So, it's a wake-up call to do something, to address a need. And so, we should get into the phraseology of I'm angry because I am needing blank, blank, blank. So here's the steps that I have listed here. That sometimes it's difficult when anger just really takes you over. We have these different steps of you stop and breathe deeply. You take a little time out. Normally, with children, we don't prescribe that someone tell them you should take a time out because children experience that as a rejection. But with ourselves, we take a time out before we react. That's very hard, especially with email and the internet. Because normally, if someone says something or writes us something, we respond very quickly and we feel a deep sense of satisfaction after blasting them to bits on the internet. Isn't it? Really, I think it was Benjamin Franklin who said, if you feel angry, you want to write someone an angry letter, you put the letter in your drawer and the next morning you wake up and you rip it up. But with email and the internet, there's too much temptation to immediately respond to some particular stimulation. And then you feel bad for it later. Of course, with certain things like WhatsApp, you can erase it before the person sees it, right? Yeah. I've had that experience. So you stop for a second. Don't react. Identify your judgmental thoughts, which are important. And so these are like enemy images that you have with someone or something. And then you identify your needs and you express your needs very clearly. And then you can empathize with others. So let's say here's the example I usually give in this regard, where people get angry with the thing that stimulates them rather than the cause of their anger. And that's the example of driving a car. You're driving a car, you see a red light on your dashboard. Now the red light stimulates your anger, right? So the right response is to unplug the red light? Is that right? No, because the red light means that you're out of oil, you're out of gas, or some other problem is there in the car. So what you do is you understand the red light, the anger, is actually a signal that something else has to be dealt with. The anger is simply a symptom. So now we're going to do some more exercises on anger, since today is a day of exercises. We're going to break out into twos again. And someone is going to talk about something that stimulated their anger. And you're going to talk about your judgments, what you thought about the person or thought about the thing, and the needs behind it. And then you're going to talk about the needs of the other person who stimulated your anger. You're going to try to guess at it. But this should be, if possible, a real-life example. Okay? So here's more exercises. So talk to the person in front of you or next to you.
Thank you.
Everything all right?
Thank you.
Is everybody ready? No? Yes? Okay, I would need to continue. Okay, I can see you all have a need for connection because you're all enjoying it, isn't it? You're connecting with each other. How often do you do things like this? Often? Really, that's nice. That's very nice. Okay, so sharing. Who wants to share? Volunteers? Yeah.
Mara, so my I was on the speaking side, so I shared an example of past anger, since you mentioned we needed to use a real life case.
Right.
So past anger that was very hard for me to process and deal with, you know, per your steps, was I had intense anger at my mother, which was caused by, she's a devotee and she's always been my guide, my spiritual guide. And so we went through a period where she started acting in what I thought was a very materially motivated way. And so it brought up a sense of betrayal in me that, you know, here is my guide who's acting, you know, I mean, not acting according to what I would think would be a spiritual response. So, it took me a while to get there, but I realized that my anger was stemming from, you know, the fact that I was judging her, that I was labeling her, and that actually I wasn't understanding her needs and her motivation in doing so. And so, you know, as far as processing it, I'm now at a point where I feel sorry for her, understanding that she has gone through a lot of turmoil and that she is being influenced by others and that she is also insecure and that she has all her own issues. And thereby, I don't feel any resentment. In fact, I have some forgiveness for her now. Even though we're still going through this very traumatic process together, in that I still don't accept her behavior and I don't condone it, and I, you know, want to be apart from it, but I don't resent her and I don't have anger for her at her anymore.
But and your anger towards her that you had towards her was stemming from a need for, what would you say?
My own need for her acceptance. you know, I've always had a need to you know, have that emotional relationship with my mother, who's also my spiritual guide. And she's always, you know, I grew up in Krishna consciousness, so she's always been my spiritual guide.
Mm.
So to have that taken away from me was that need that I was craving. And that's, I think that's what caused my anger.
Let me try to guess a little bit. What about a need for stability, security? Any of these things resonate with you?
Not from her, no.
No, your need.
Oh, my need.
Need. Stability, security, an example.
I would say an example, yes.
An example, role model.
Role model, yes.
Role model.
Role model.
That's a big need.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good, yeah. So, role model. And so, what you pointed out was very important insofar as keeping people in Krishna consciousness and also bringing people to Krishna consciousness. People do things to a large extent because of role models, people they want to be like. And I've spoken about that before in previous seminars, that children, they take up Krishna consciousness because they have a specific person they want to be like, a role model. And it's not always their parents. And children sometimes leave Krishna consciousness because they have role models that are not so desirable in Krishna consciousness, or not in Krishna consciousness. For example, in my childhood, of course, I didn't have any fantastic Krishna conscious role models, but the films that we watched when I was a child were mainly films of some hero sacrificing his life, his or her life, for the welfare of humanity. So that became one of my role models in life, and actually led later on into me dedicating my life to helping people understand Krishna. And then later on, Prabhupada became my role model. So this is very, very important to have someone you can really, I mean, you know, correct me if I'm not correct in pointing this out. In your relationship, you mentioned your mother was always your inspiration, role model, or example, or whatever like that. It's really hard functioning unless one has someone they can relate to or look up to,
right,
as a model. And that gives one stability. Because,
right,
as people, we want to be like that person in the future. And that's the key to raising children, right there. To give them role models, someone they can really relate to and be like when they grow up.
Right.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so who else would like to share? One of the...
It also means example.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can talk about that subject matter if you want, but yeah. Did you want to share something? No. Okay. Not specifically role models, we were talking about anger.
No, just taking that example that Rasa Mataji was sharing.
Yeah.
Not her case, but talking in general.
In general, yeah.
The phrases, in addition to role model, it seemed that there's a phrase she used. I feel betrayed.
Betrayed.
There's a need for trust also.
For trust, yeah. For trust and stability and...
You want to trust your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, naturally you have that expectation to trust your parents. I mean, generally, not with the parents, but generally when we have expectations from people, it can turn into a demand. And then when someone doesn't fulfill those expectations, I mean, parents, I guess you gotta have expectations from parents, you know, they're gonna feed you, act nicely, behave themselves like that. But in general, with other types of interactions, when we have expectations of people, people sometimes experience that that is a demand. Because when people don't live up to our expectations, we feel angry with them. But with children, it is natural to have those expectations of parents. I think it would be extremely unnatural to tell a child, you should not have any expectations from your parents. But in other circumstances, like even in a marriage relationship, to have expectations that are actually extreme, it could destroy the relationship. Because then you have two adults who are voluntarily entering into a relationship. And then the other person experiences that as a demand, like you see here. And then what happens when there's a demand, you naturally, or the other person wants to do the opposite, or submits. But they don't submit with their heart. They're disconnected in either case. Usually I hear demands as, you know, well, when I hear something as a demand, usually I want to rebel. And that forms a large part of my own psychological nature, rebellion, because of a need for autonomy. Because I was always hearing demands from my mother that if you must do it this way, you must do it that way, and if you don't do it that way, you'll get that repercussion. You know, my son, for example, when I... she always told me that she wanted me to be a doctor. And I said, why should I be a doctor? And she said, because I want you to be a doctor. And I said, why? She said, because you're my son. And then, of course, I always say, why? Because I gave birth to you. And I did everything for you. You know, it's called a guilt trip. And then, naturally, I didn't want to be a doctor then. If my mother had told me, I don't want you to be a doctor no matter what, I would have become a doctor. So I use that reverse psychology sometimes on kids. So we have to be careful about demands in relationship because it really breaks the relationship. You're supposed to do this because you're my son or my husband or whatever. And then as I mentioned, I actually mentioned this yesterday too, then we don't really feel grateful. And the last thing we're going to do today after this next step is talk about appreciation and gratefulness. How to appreciate someone. So this next chapter is very interesting, and I haven't done this one quite often. It's how to say no. And, you know, actually we experienced this today, that I was making reference to this chapter because I was asked today to participate in some other empathic communication thing. And my first response was to say, I have to look, check the book to say no. So the way you say no to someone is not just no, because the person hears that as a rejection rather than just I can't do it. So you need to express your own needs and feelings, like, or at least understand your own needs and feelings. So if someone asked me to do this, I won't mention Vamsi Dari who it was. he shall remain nameless. So, so if someone asked me, you know, can you do this other empathic communication seminar only take a few hours or something like that? Once a month? And I thought, oh my God. How do I say no to him? And then I went through these steps. I said that basically you're giving me a nervous breakdown. Oh, no, I didn't say that. That's called a guilt trip. You're destroying my life, you know, by making demands on me. I said, I explained that I have so many things to do and I'm trying to perhaps do some more writing. I'm involved in so many GBC meetings every day. So when I heard your request, I felt fear. I didn't say exactly like that, but I expressed it with my body language because I have a need for some free time. So then he heard that and he appreciated that. So in other words, the way to say no is you express, you know, when you said that, you know, I appreciate your request. Your request is nice. Thank you for asking me, which is what I said anyway, isn't it? Thank you for asking me and being concerned and wanting me to participate in this. However, I have, and you don't want to use the word but, because as people often say, don't put, anyway, whatever, in someone's face. I'm not going to use that expression. You know, because but can mean two different things. So, I would say when I heard your expression, I felt grateful you were asking me, but I felt anxiety. And I am doing all these things. Would you be willing to not have me participate, or would you be willing to have me do it once a year? So you have to respond like that. And that way a person doesn't feel that they're being rejected. So, all right, so here's an exercise. See how you all answer this one. The child says, no, I am not going to school. Whoops. I am not going to school. How do you deal with that no?
You won't get food today.
You won't get food today. No, seriously, how would you deal with it? Yes, I don't. I'll be the child. Because I don't like school. I'll be a difficult child.
It's okay you don't like school, but because you go to school, what fun activities do you do there?
None.
Do you like to play in park?
No.
No? Recess time?
No.
Friends?
I don't have any friends.
Oh, I'm so sorry. But,
you're so sorry. I'm sorrier than you are. That's about you, it's not
Okay, can you find something like which will you motivate you to go to school?
Motivates? I don't even understand the word motivate. I'm just in second grade, you know, how much would I know about motivation?
They do know motivate, Prabhu.
They do know that word?
Yes, I am a second grader.
Okay. Tell us your second
grader. I have real second graders.
Okay, so motivate.
What
no, there's nothing that motivates me to go to school. I just want to stay home and...
Okay, can we make a deal?
And here you are training me up like a dolphin, you know.
What would you rather do today instead of going to school?
I'd rather stay home and play.
Here we go.
I'm a real difficult child, you know, so... I'm a difficult child.
You want to stay home all day and play?
Play and rest and just be myself, you know, have my own life.
It sounds like you just want a break. Are you feeling well today?
Maybe I'm feeling great. I'm feeling great. I should take the month off from the school.
What is it about school that you don't like?
I don't like anything about school. I don't like the teachers. I don't like the students. I don't like the classroom. I don't like the bus that takes me to school. Nothing.
Looks like you should change your school.
What'd you say?
We need to pick a new school out for you. We need to transfer.
No, I don't like any schools.
Why do you think mom and dad want you to go to school?
I don't care.
I mean, no one acknowledged that school can be boring.
I don't care what they want.
No, I'm saying that none of us acknowledge for a child that school can
be boring. You haven't. Yes, well, you know, why is the child so? You got to get to the child's needs.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if there was something fun at school that you enjoy.
Something fun at school?
Something.
No.
No,
it's just an obnoxious experience.
Do you like learning?
Do I like learning? Yeah. I like staying home and reading and learning myself. You got to address why he doesn't want to go to school. Basically, you know, his feelings, you got to so he's really communicating with you. He wants to be heard. It's not so much that he doesn't want to go to school, that he wants to communicate his frustration or his feelings, and no one is listening to him. He has a need for connection. If you satisfy his need for connection, so you're just dealing with the words right now. You're not dealing with the heart with him, with me. With just the words.
I mean, asking the questions is trying to connect, isn't it?
Not necessarily. Because you're asking very pointed questions. I would say, all right, so we don't want to go to school. It's kind of boring, isn't it? I wouldn't ask, is it boring? You know, are you bored? It's kind of boring, you know, just like that. And then, you know, then he'd start to open up to you after some time. And he said, yeah. And finally, you understand him. And then you're resonating with him, and then his whole reason for not going to school or his anger becomes diffused. And then because you're resonating with him, and he feels this connection with you, he's more likely to want to go to school. But if you simply question him, like, why don't you want to go to school? Don't you have any friends? Don't, you know, this, and that. It's actually, it's like intrusive on his autonomy. The whole point with empathy is not to try to get someone to do something. It's not a system of management or control of someone. It's to connect with people. So if you connect with people, then they are more likely to act in terms of their own interests. And your interest too, because you're as the mother, your interest is for the child's welfare. And if the child feels that, the child will be more likely to go to school or do whatever that the child needs to do. But if it's just like questioning, why do you need to go to school? I mean, why don't you want to go to school? What's wrong with you? Isn't there anything fun at school for you? Don't you have any friends? You're not resonating with them. Remember, we're talking about the guitar resonating. You resonate with the person. You know, if it's a real small kid, yeah, we don't want to go to school. You can actually use the we, but that's only with a very small kid. You wouldn't do it with an adult. You'd say, yeah, going to school can sometimes really be boring. And maybe it's not boring. Maybe there's someone who beats him up at school. He'll resonate with that. He'll say, no, it's not boring. It's just that the kids are mean to me. There's something in him that's driving him to the point where he doesn't want to go to school. And really, connection brings that out of him. And then you can deal with the situation at that point. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. One strategy that would be Bauhaus, because
had this kind of conversation. I don't want to go to school.
Yeah.
Prahlada said that. Generally, what we do is bad cop, good cop, because sometimes he doesn't want to speak, no matter how we ask.
Yeah.
So sometimes I say, you know, Prahlada, you need to go to school. Come on. I know there must be. And then immediately my husband said, Himangi, wait. Like, you know, and immediately there is an empathy coming.
Oh, good, yeah.
Immediately he opens, yes. And then, you know, that's always been a breakthrough for us.
Ah.
That strategy always works.
That's a good strategy. Yeah. Bad cop and good cop.
Because then he spoke as mom doesn't understand. And then he goes, mom doesn't understand anything. You know, she... And then dad will say, okay, Himangi, you cool off. You go to the next room, I'll talk to Prahlad.
In other words, he's agreeing with Prahlad and he's saying, yeah, you're right, your mother doesn't understand.
Exactly.
The breakthrough is someone else also understands what I'm going through.
So that strategy always works in our house.
So they end up consoling each other, or? Okay. So, anyway, so we're talking about how to say no. Does everyone understand that? Well, actually, we dealt with what to do when someone says no to you. But there's how to say no. Let me just try this on someone. Okay, you ready? I'll ask you something that you don't want to do. Okay, would you? I would like for you to take sannyas.
Oh. me too, Mark.
Take care.
Sannyas will be more liberating for her.
He's happy now.
You got liberation on his
birthday. It's his birthday, that's right.
It's his birthday.
The 40th birthday. Happy birthday. So, now you have to wait till you're 50. But, yeah, you know, I'm saying you should take sannyas. So how are you going to say no? He doesn't want to say no.
Right now I have two kids who are dependent on me, and my wife is also dependent on me. Maybe... that's why I will not be able to take sannyas now.
Don't you know that verse? Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam ego bahunam yopidati kamam. You know that verse?
Yes, ma'am.
There's many eternal living entities and there's one supreme eternal entity. And that eternal entity is taking care of the needs of all the plural living entities. So it is an illusion to think of yourself as the protector and maintainer of your wife and children. Krishna is actually the maintainer. See, Krishna talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvalokam maheshram suvridam. And also ananyas chinte antamam yejanak paribhasate tesham nitribhyuktamam yogashemahamyam. If you're dedicated to Krishna, Krishna will carry what you like and preserve your family. Do you have any faith in the Gita?
I don't know, but Krishna himself says. Bhagavad Gita that one should not do others' job. One has to stick to his own.
But Krishna also says, Sarva Dharma Parishasama. Mokshiyashami Masucha, don't worry. So how would you deal with that one?
I would dedicate my life to Krishna being a family man.
Yeah, but you can save so many other families if you take sannyas. So, like Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya left his little family for the family of the whole world. I don't want to convince him. So the whole point is you're not dealing with your own feelings and needs. You're not responding to me with feelings and needs. You know, when you say this, Maharaj, I'm feeling scared. Because I really have a need to take care of my family. This is my deep need. Would you please tell me, Maharaj, what you just heard me say? And of course, then I would respond, you're Maya. No, I mean, it's just... No, but this is the way. You have to deal with your own needs. Instead of saying, you know, it's my duty to do this, or quoting some verse from the Bhagavad Gita, you'd say, you know, I feel really scared, Maharaj, when you said that. Because to me, it's very important. And so needs and values are actually very similar. To me, it's very important to take care of those who I love. And then, you know, that would be saying no. You didn't say no, you just said, I just felt scared when you said that. And to me, it's very important. And then I would say, empathically, thank you for sharing that with me. That was important. You understand?
Yes.
So, yeah. So that's how you say no. You have to be, in other words, it's being vulnerable. It's very hard to be vulnerable and say, I'm scared when I hear that. Because it's so important to me to take care of my family, which I love. But instead, you're putting on the mental platform saying, this is my duty. You know, Krishna says, you know, everybody should not give up your duty to do another's duty. It's better to do your own duty, even if imperfectly, than to do another's duty. So you're just like throwing philosophy at me and not connecting to me. And this is what devotees often do. They throw philosophy at each other. Yeah.
Maharaj asks, so there's also, in addition to one's own feeling the need to see that, you know, maybe it's not you, Maharaj, but it could be a friend who's encouraging him to do that. And then to feel very honored that, wow, he's actually, you know, you're actually thinking, I'm capable of taking sannyas. I'm so grateful for your vote of confidence. But honestly, I just can't do it.
I'm scared.
But I really value your friendship and your encouragement.
Yeah, that's good. That's an empathic relationship. Thank you for sharing that like that. Thank you for having that confidence in me. Wow. I really appreciate that. Nityananda, you have
it? Yeah, Maharaj, this exchange of take sannyas.
Yeah.
In a tongue-in-cheek, I was going to ask you, in which year is this conversation happening? Is it in the early 70s? Then he's saying, I'm scared, would actually exacerbate things for him.
Yeah.
Because the kind of pressure that was there.
There's pressure,
You have to. And if he said, I'm scared, right, like you rightly said, you're in Maya. In fact, even his living in the temple or wherever would have become even more endangered.
Yeah.
So even when you would say, I'm scared, ideally the other person, in this case you're so in tune with someone's needs that you might say, oh, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
But someone may not at all be in tune with someone else's expression of needs.
Yeah.
Feelings, and what happens in such conversations?
You know, if they keep preaching to you.
Yeah.
If they say, you're scared, that's Maya. That's Maya. Don't you have faith in Krishna? You know, they would go to that extent. Do you have faith in Krishna? Don't you have faith in Prabhupada? Prabhupada wants it. We have to save the world's emergency situation and everything like that. I would stick to my guns and not, you know, I have a need for autonomy, make my own decisions in life. And ultimately, I'd come up with, say, you know, it's my decision. I'm not gonna be controlled by guilt trips. I'd be really blunt like that. I mean, that's how I would deal with the whole thing. Yeah.
I have a question because I faced a situation where the spiritual master had given an instruction to the disciple to go somewhere to serve, mm-hmm. and this disciple expressed the need why she couldn't go somewhere because, you know, because she had a daughter,
right.
not a devotee, but
right.
an adult daughter, not like a minor, but still she felt the need to be there for her children.
Right.
And the guru was really upset, and in fact, it disturbed her faith. And but she went the first time to serve wherever he wanted her to serve. And then she came back because her guilt was killing her, because she
right.
felt that she is not being a good mother. And then she really, and what disturbed her faith when I was seeing as a temple president, as a neutral person, what I was feeling was when she came back, the disturbance was because she was split between her need to follow what her spiritual master was saying to her and also her need to fulfill what she felt was her emotional need and her daughter's need that she wanted to fulfill. But the spiritual master said that she is on a mental platform because she didn't follow his instruction. He said that to her. And it totally destroyed her, like
her faith.
It disturbed her, and still she has not recovered. Her faith is still quite shaken up. So when devotees come and disclose to you these kind of very personal discussions they're having with the spiritual master.
Wow.
How do you how can one respond? Because again, it's a very fine line. You can't say anything about the guru because you never know when they will turn around and tell that you were saying negative
things. Yeah, no, I wouldn't say negative things about the guru.
So how do you support such a person where there is this dilemma and then they're feeling guilty that they didn't follow their guru's instruction, that's why they're suffering, but that's not the reason they're suffering.
Well, I would first quote Prabhupada's from the Prabhupada's purport in the Bhagavad Gita, where blind following is condemned, blind following absurd inquiries are condemned. And then I would explain to them why the guru asked them to do that, because of his intense desire to save the conditioned souls. Obviously, he's sending her somewhere to serve Krishna for Prabhupada's mission. So to have her resonate with the guru's desire or the guru's needs. So the guru, I would explain that her guru has such strong needs to please Prabhupada that he's seen things like that. It's not a deficiency in the guru so much, but it's his own connection with his guru that's making him, you know, pressure her to do that particular activity. But it's her responsibility to choose. And the guru, being a bona fide guru, will never reject her for that. He may be temporarily upset with her, or may manifest that, but it's not really upset with her. He's feeling frustrated because of his intense desire to serve his guru. So he's not really upset with you. So when we get, you know, he's angry not with you, but the real cause of the anger is his need to please his guru. So it's seen or perceived by her that he's angry with her. But he's frustrated in his attempts to serve his guru, and that's really the cause of the anger, not her. And his compassion will always, as a bona fide guru, his compassion will, and love will always be there for you. I mean, like Prabhupada, you have that example of Prabhupada when he told Tamal Krishna Maharaj to go to China. You remember that?
Yes.
And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, "I'm not going." And Prabhupada said, "Well, you have a choice. I'm taking all your service away from you. You're just sitting down here in Mayapur and chanting. Or you can go to China." And Prabhupada was faced with, and Tamal Krishnamurti was faced with that dilemma. But that was not that he, I mean, you could say he was angry, yes, with Tamal Krishnamurti, but in the stimulation of his anger was that he wanted really, I guess, to protect the devotees in North America.
That's a real story.
That's the real story. Because the devotees in North America, the leaders in North America came and complained about him because he was stealing all the devotees from the temples.
Oh, Radha Damodar.
Radha Damodar, yeah. Because the devotees would wake up, the temple president would wake up one morning and find all the brahmacharis gone. In the middle of the night. And then he would, when he was accused of something, he says, I didn't tell them to leave, because he had someone else do it for him, you know. So everybody, all the leaders got really riled up in North America. And so, you know, so Prabhupada, his need was to keep his society in order, that's one, and also to preach in a new country. So Prabhupada was getting upset because his need, his Krishna conscious need, was there. And I guess to keep America like sane and stable or something like that. And so as far as the guru was concerned in this particular case with the lady, she should see his need, his actual need. And his need was so overwhelming that he, at that particular point, he wasn't cognizant of that particular need she had. It's sometimes difficult when one is managing and also the guru at the same time. It's a very difficult situation where the guru has to wear two hats. Because I know I'm in that situation quite often. And that's why I feel, and we were talking about this earlier today, there has to be more of a division of labor in ISKCON. I feel that ultimately the guru should not be in charge of anything.
This guru was not the manager. He was just being guru. He was not the manager.
So why was it, did he want to send her somewhere?
He felt that service would have been best for her.
For her personal spiritual life. He didn't feel that he wanted to spread the Krishna conscious movement more by sending her there?
It was more a personal, because he felt that she would fit that service in a different continent.
And she wasn't doing too well in a particular situation, he felt?
No, she wanted to take voluntary retirement.
From her job?
From her job.
Mm-hmm.
So then he said, oh, this is because you have the skills, you know, you'll fit very well in this particular project, so why don't you go to...
So he wasn't managing any of those projects.
No, he was not a manager. She went to him as a guru to ask, what should be my next step and what would you like me to do? How can I feel connected and serve you?
So he misunderstood her psychophysical nature. That happens. That happens, yes.
Situation is there not like before the disciple?
We're offline or something. The camera, okay.
Before the disciple goes on a guilt trip, saying, "Oh, I'm not able to do what my guru asked me to do." I felt in this situation there is a part missing where the disciple can communicate to the guru that this is how I'm feeling. So they didn't take the trouble to communicate to the guru their own feelings and needs.
Yeah. The disciples should have the right to go to the guru and say, you know, when you asked me to do that, I felt really scared. I have this really need to be and protect my daughter. And it's very strong, and I'm very scared. I mean, once you reveal your emotions like that, I think most gurus will actually be empathic, I hope. I'm not going to ask who it was. Anyway, so... What? I'm not going to ask. She said, I feel very scared.
She said that, yes. She said that she she feels not ready for that service, and she feels guilty to leave her daughter and go. So she feels a need to be a mother. She needed some more time.
Yeah, I need.
Because her daughter had to adjust to her mother becoming a devotee. So the daughter was struggling with that. So she felt that now she just leaves her and goes to a different continent where she can't even physically connect with her mom.
Then the disciple just has to say, I can't do it.
Yeah. Because finally she said tried.
I just have to be honest with you, Guru Maharaj. I can't do it, and you're trying your best to help me, and I appreciate that very much. And I just can't do it. And then asking the guru, you know, what... Basically, it's a reciprocal relationship. What do you hear when I say, I can't do it? And if the guru says, I'm hearing you're not surrendered, then she needs to say, I want to do what you want, Guru Maharaj. I want to become Krishna conscious, but I have this deep emotional need to take care of my daughter. And just keep repeating it until the guru finally clues in on it and gets it.
That's a nice question. Like, when I'm saying this, how are you receiving it? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just to ask the guru, how did you hear what I said?
Yeah.
You know, what did you hear? And, you know, after a while, if someone expresses a strong emotion, I think most gurus would get it, wouldn't they?
I think so, yeah.
I think most of the male gurus, when someone starts to express a strong emotion, say, all right. You know, yeah. Or the lady starts crying and says, okay. I mean, what would happen if you started crying in front of Ramabad Maharaj?
Oh, he's seen me many times. And he just sits there and he's quite empathetic.
Oh, that's good.
He's quite empathetic. Yes, Lord, all of us have cried in front of him.
Oh, my God. Does he always keep a box of tissues with him?
Or? Oh, yeah. He always has, at least when usually I have an agenda when it's an emotional meeting. So I want to discuss this and I want to discuss A, B, C. And when he realizes it's an emotional meeting, he always has a tissue box next to him and just, okay, have this.
That's good. Okay.
I should honestly say that one time when I was a young devotee, I was having a total meltdown in front of him. He tried to put some sense in me and finally he rubbed his head and he said, Himangi, I'm just a sannyasi. That was the only time he finally, because I didn't stop, I went on and on for a whole hour.
Maybe I need to reach out to him and express some empathy.
I'm one of the most difficult female disciples here.
Since that day, she looks to other
sannyasis. Yeah.
I won't talk to you,
Mark. I think I'll just communicate with him tonight. I said, I heard that Himangi is your disciple. Observation. Are you feeling anxiety? Because you have a need for peace.
But nowadays the cue is he starts looking at his watch. Okay, Mom, you need to shut up.
Would you like to stay in New Jersey? That's funny. You see, we all have a need for humor, isn't it? So what are the questions we have before we go to gratitude? Because it's actually getting a little late now. Yeah.
Maharaj, there has been a question online for some time.
What was the question?
From Atulya Devadasi from Boston.
Mm-hmm.
How to handle conflict of needs. For example, the mother has a need to eat and sleep, but the child needs attention.
Sleeping pills.
Yeah, the little baby you're talking about.
She has youngish children.
Youngest children. And the children are just like, they have a need for attention all day long. Well, there's different strategies. One is get your husband to take care of the children. another one is hire a babysitter or something like that, or au pair, or whatever you call it. You know, anyway. Yeah. Or get someone to come and help. I mean, obviously, you're in such stress, not having enough sleep. You have to make some strategy. I mean, you can't. What can you do? The children do require a certain amount of attention, and especially little children, isn't it? You can't just send them into the other room or tie them up. I know what my mother did with me. She put me on a running line. You know what a running... She had like a leash on me, and we had a running line in the backyard, so I couldn't get away. It sounds bad, but it was actually nice. You know, it sounds like, oh, she's treating you like a dog. But actually, I enjoyed it because it gave me freedom within bounds. So that was the strategy for me. It's interesting, isn't it? But nowadays, you probably call 911 or something. If I saw the child in the backyard, I'd be like a dog. But it was good. It met her need and it met my need too. So think of some strategy. All you have to do is be aware of the need. You know, I'm not going to fix it for her and tell her what to do. But she has a need for rest. She has a need for peace. And then you have also a need to take care of the children. Just be aware of the need and a strategy will come up. Because you... Many cases you have to think outside the box and come up with unusual strategies. I'm not going to give people their strategies. They have to own their own strategies. So I'm not here to solve anyone's problems. I'm here to give people the tools to work on their own issues and needs. See, very often the guru will try to solve, or the mentor or someone will try to solve the problems. But that doesn't work. Because you don't own it. You understand? You don't own it, you won't do it. But if you own it, you'll do it. Like, for example, this vaccine thing. If someone just told me to take the vaccine, I wouldn't take it. But because I did the research and found out and weighed the risks, pro and con, then I decided to take it, and I own it. And that's why I'm more enthusiastic about the vaccine than anyone else. And because I own it. No one told me to take it. You know, if I got GBC directive from the chairman of the GBC to take the vaccine, yeah, that's not a good reason, is it? So she has to own her solution. I'm not going to solve it for her. That's the question there? Another question?
This is from Queenie Nguyen.
Queenie Nguyen.
Queenie, I don't know how to say the last name.
Nguyen. Oh, yeah.
I think it's
Nguyen. Yeah, she's from Malaysia, I think.
How to express your feelings and needs to those who are not empathic? What if your needs are not fulfilled in that case? For a certain person, I choose not to express my needs because I know it is not going anywhere. What is your suggestion?
My suggestion is don't express your needs to that specific person. Find persons who can express your needs to. What happened there?
Nothing. I'm just scrolling to see if there are any other questions.
Oh, I see. Because there's certain people who just can't reciprocate with for one reason or other. And we don't demand that they have to be the ones to reciprocate. We have to find someone who we can relate to, who we can express our feelings and needs to. It's not to everybody. I mean, I remember, well, when I was a young brahmachari, I went to a sannyasi and I said, can I express my feelings? Can I express my thoughts? And he says, no. And all your thoughts are Maya and all your feelings are Maya. I said, okay. And I was traumatized by that response. So we have to find people and not demand one particular individual has to respond to or reciprocate with us in that particular way. That's up to us. We're the ones who have to come up with the strategies. No one else comes up with the strategies. We're responsible for our own feelings and needs, and no one else, and we are not responsible for anyone else's feelings and needs. I'm certainly a mother and a child, that's a little bit different scenario. But in other cases, we're not responsible. I'm not going to solve someone else's problems. I'll give someone the tools to solve their problems. So, that's it for the questions? Yes. It's on. Was it? Was on a second ago. Press it again.
Maharaj, sorry, Rasa Mataji. Yeah, Mataji is sharing about anger on the parents. I'm just thinking, on the other hand, being in the parent position, we know kids look for that role model.
Yeah.
When I'm not at that stage, in this particular scenario, would a communication, of course it depends on the kid's age also, if they are in a position to understand, can I go to them and express, I know I may not be...
Yes, honesty. Yes, honesty. And that, I think you can correct me, Rasa, if I'm wrong, but I think if the parent is honest about their situation rather than hypocritical, that goes a long way to resolving that particular conflict. You know, it's one thing once one's hypocritical, puts one face before some people as a great devotee, and before others you know what they're actually like. That's really what, that dissonance is really what creates the problem. But if someone just says, honestly, you know, I'm struggling, I know what the right thing is to be, and then, but I just can't do it right now. I think that goes a long way to resolving it. So any other questions before we go?
What to do when someone's trying to take you on a guilt trip? Like, say, I had one of my cousins call me a couple of weeks back and said, you're giving so much tension to me. And I was like, nobody gives tension to anybody.
Yeah.
We just take tension. I'm like, what are you talking about? But then I was thinking, what's an empathic response to such a statement when somebody's making such a statement?
Well, you could say, you're feeling very tense.
She's like, yeah.
Why? Why are you feeling like that?
Because she was coming from a place...
No, I'm asking, you're her now.
Me?
No, you are her.
Yeah, I'm talking about her.
So no, you are her now.
Maharaj is saying he's...
He's doing role playing.
Yeah, you are her. You're taking her position right now.
Okay.
So I'm taking your position.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you feel like that?
Because you haven't called me for a long time. You have been avoiding my calls, and it's bothering me.
Why do you feel that I'm avoiding your calls?
Because I call you and you didn't pick up the call.
Well, maybe I am avoiding your calls. No, then it's a question of explaining that, you know, last few days I've been really busy, or last few weeks I've been really busy. I haven't had time for anything. You know, at a certain point you may say, please excuse me, the last few days or weeks I've been... very intense my life has been.
No, but then the demand from that side, now I'm talking about me, my life. Yeah. So the demand from her end is like, it's obstructing my need for space.
Yeah.
So when she wants that, she wants to talk to me every week, an hour, and then the whole thing is about what did you do, what did I do, and it's like very,
all right, then.
Very boring for me to engage in that conversation. Mm. And the tone of the conversation is not so encouraging for me.
Mm. All right.
It's demoralizing for me. So I want to avoid such conversations.
So first get in touch with your own feelings and needs internally. You deal with yourself internally, that I really have a need, you know, for peace or more time or using my time properly. And I'm feeling an anxiety when she said that, you know, this guilt trip or whatever it is. I feel anxiety when she said that. And then at that point, you'll know how to respond to her, which is, you know, when I hear you say that, I feel anxiety because I have a need for just like very short conversations and right to the point conversations and more time in my life. I mean, you really have to be sometimes very blunt without criticizing her. You know, I appreciate first, and then you can also appreciate, I appreciate you really want to connect with me and I really want to connect with you. But I'm really stressed out because of time, which is what I'm hearing you're saying. That we spend a lot of time on the phone. You know, last week we spent 1 hour and 36 minutes. Observation. No, you don't say that. We spend a lot of time on the phone, and I really have a need for more time. Would you be willing to speak to me every 2 weeks or make the phone calls shorter? I mean, there's different ways of dealing with it. But first of all, you got to get in touch with your own feelings and needs. Why do you feel stressed out when she said that to you? Because you have a need to make your own decisions in life. You have a need, I mean, whatever the need is. Okay, any other questions? We're getting a little late tonight. Yeah.
Maharaj, in the same kind of scenario, I face every alternative days with my parents. I feel that my need of wanting to be treated as an adult is on every alternative days is being challenged by my parents.
Mm.
Because I feel the way when they say, where are you? I was so worried, you know, only after one day. So it may I feel that you don't treat me adult. I can't take care of myself, or you know, there's so many people, you know, I have 3 children, my husband, if anything happen, they will let you know. So that brings a very blockage for me too. So I feel very forcefully, just to avoid this whole conversation, I just called. So even though my need is to do something else, I still do that.
Oh my God. Sometimes you need to just express your needs and feelings and then ask them, what did you hear me say? And then get them to reflect it, and then you correct it, and then you go back and forth. I have a need for trust. Is it trust? What is the need you have?
That trust that I'm okay if I...
You know, trust in you. I need to be trusted.
Yeah, and I choose that whatever I do in my life, I don't, if I recognize that I am very careful, trust me. I'm not like going...
Yeah, you have a need for trust, a need to be treated with respect,
yeah.
Like that.
And space also sometimes.
Space. All right, space, trust, respect, like that. And then you need to resonate with yourself and understand that. And then you can express that to them. You know, I'm feeling anxiety. When you said this, I feel anxiety. And I really have a need to be trusted. What did you hear me say? And they'll say, you told us to bug off. And then you say, no. Let me say it again. I have a need for space and for trust. This is my deep need for trust, and I'm in anxiety over the situation. And you keep going again, and or if they say, you told me to bug off, and you can also ask them, why do you feel like that? You know, the whys go a long way to uncovering basic needs. And you can drill down with whys many, many, many times. You know, if you feel that someone is not dealing with their feelings or needs, you can always, you could generally use the word why. You know, why do you feel like that? And they'll say, because you're our daughter. And you say, okay, but why do you call me so often? Because we're worried. Why are you worried? Because you could do anything at any moment. And then you say, and then you say, I have a need for trust. And how do you, don't you, you know, please reflect that. Anyway, you got to go back and forth with them. Parents are very difficult animals to deal with. So any other questions before we just do gratitude? Tonight's been a little more relaxed than the other night. So the final thing I want to end with is, which we end with all the time when we're doing the seminar, is gratitude and appreciation. And we have a real need for gratitude, for expressing gratitude and being appreciated. There's nothing wrong with that. But gratitude is expressed in a certain way, in the empathic communication way, of what the person did, how we feel, and what need was met. In other words, let's say I was good, I would deal with, she wrote, you cooked for me today. It was real mushy. Anyway, so. No, you cooked for me yesterday. So. And I felt, you know, it was very tasty. It fulfilled my need for nice, you know, nice prasadam, healthy prasadam. And, you know, thank you very much for that. Thank you very much for that. And how do you feel? You know, it's very specific. Gratitude should always be specific, not non-specific. Not, oh, you're a great cook. It doesn't mean anything. But, you know, thank you for doing something very, very specifically for me. And like that, fulfill the particular need. Like I often give the example in the seminar when I approach Prabhupada. I say, thank you very much, Prabhupada. You've taught me about Krishna consciousness. And I'm feeling so happy and grateful and overwhelmed, because I have a need for connection to the Supreme Absolute Truth, for understanding what life is all about, for having a purpose in life. You've given me a purpose in life. Thank you very much. And that's a powerful appreciation or gratitude. Same thing. So, does everybody understand this? All right, so does anyone want to give me an example of that with someone who is not here in the room?
Oh. Can I do it with someone who's in the room?
As long as it's not me. Do it with your husband.
Your husband is here.
Do it with your husband.
Can I do it with your marriage, please?
Okay. Yeah, I'm not going
to. Where you can say no.
All right, do it.
So many years ago, twice my spiritual master told me, Sri Radhika, you need to learn to say the right thing in the right way. You sometimes have the right message, but you communicate it. And then I met you, Maharaj, and I'm feeling so grateful to you, because
I have a real need to connect with devotees. I have a real need to have loving relationships with my family and friends. And over the course of these years, you have spent so much time training.
What?
Training me in how to really try to develop a consciousness of connecting with my family and friends. And I'm feeling very hopeful. Because, yes, there are slips, daily slips, in terms of my consciousness of really being with people, present and empathic. But I'm feeling very hopeful that I can grow and I can have loving relationships. And you have changed my life, Maharaj. And
what?
You, I'm just amazed that you made this trip all the way to Chicago. And I know I'm one of the reasons why you came here. And I'm feeling so grateful that because I have a need to connect with you, I have a need for connection, I have a need for Krishna consciousness, and I have a need for feeling connected to Prabhupada and feeling connected to ISKCON. And I feel revived in my Krishna consciousness by this two-day trip. And I'm also feeling very grateful for the connection that you are, the time you're taking to connect with my children, because as a mother, I have a need to see them feeling inspired and seeing role models that they can look up to, and people that don't judge them, but they accept them for all their noise and all their behavior. And you have been doing that for the last 2 days with my two boys. So thank you very much. And I have a request that you please, please continue to guide me. And please don't give up on me. Thank you.
Thank you. So thank you very much for that appreciation. You know, to be able to help devotees, help you and devotees who are very close to Krishna and my dear God brothers, it gives me great satisfaction and a meaning in life. So thank you very much. So I was also modeling how you respond to appreciation, because in many cases, when we're appreciating, we say, we get appreciated, we say, it was nothing. I was just serving Prabhupada, you know, it's my duty. But, it makes relationships very, very powerful and close and everything like that, when there's appreciation between different people and relationships. I mean, husbands and wives, I mean, how often do you all do that? Did you not do you do that very often?
Every day.
Every day, good. You mean every day? Wow, see? So it's very powerful. It keeps the relationship together. You know, thank you for doing this. You know, wow. And then the other person appreciates the appreciation instead of saying, it was nothing, you know. It was just serving Krishna. Just doing what, you know, Krishna just told me to do it. And then, so that's very powerful. So, all right. Who else wants to do an appreciation?
I want to do.
Not of me, please. Yeah, do of your husband, please.
Someone is not in the room, is there?
Someone is not in the room. Yeah, that's even better.
I'm very grateful that you're giving this opportunity to express, especially when you said not in this room.
Yeah.
Are my parents. I think that they really have raised me wonderfully. Not many times growing up I could appreciate that or see their love. But as I came into Krishna consciousness, I could appreciate a lot of things. But one thing in the recent past, what has happened with me, I realized that I grew up in a very non-judgmental environment. And I was even more obnoxious when I was younger, but I was never made to feel like that, you know. And we were three girls, and I was the youngest. But my parents, my father knew, because I was always this advocate kind of personality, so I would challenge my teachers, my principals. I was notorious in my school. But my dad was never called into parent, we used to call it PTA. He was never, and I would always say, why you don't go to school and meet my teachers? He said, if they really have issues with you, they will let me know, and then I'll go. So my father and mother had so much of, at that time I didn't realize, but in my recently what happened with me, that gave me so much strength, because what they gave me when I was young, like the strength that I gained, and in other words, they never shamed me, they were okay with me being not a perfect child. And they were not very happy with my Krishna consciousness, because we left everything. Because they're Indian parents, and they felt that you came to America and you gave up your careers, you know. So they were very upset, and I was not very sensitive to them. Because I couldn't feel, because I felt that, oh, I'm doing this for Prabhupada, they will never understand it. So I was very judgmental about their love. But when this happened, I could only trust them, because I needed support. So I went back to them, and in the 31 years of my relationship with my husband, is the first time I actually reached out to my parents, because I really didn't have any issues or problems that I had to ever go back to them and seek their support. But this was the first time I did. And I was thinking that my parents, especially my mother, because she was very disturbed by my being a full-time devotee, I thought she would, both my parents would say, we told you, you didn't listen to us. I mentally prepared myself, and I said, don't react to that. It's natural response. But my mother surprised me. She said that Krishna knows what you did for him. Let this not stop you from serving Krishna.
Wow.
I was surprised. I was really surprised hearing that from her. And she said that you need to take care of your practical life. You do that, but in your free time, don't give up your service.
Wow.
I was really surprised. And my father's response was, any religious organization where it's institutionalized, there's a part that is bhakti and there's a part that is politics, because you're dealing with people. So now you're free to be free. You're freed from the politics part. And you just stay on the bhakti side. And he said this, though he's read Prabhupada's books, but he's very strongly grounded his impersonal training. But he said that, but I do appreciate that ISKCON is the only organization, even after Prabhupada left the planet, is still moving forward quite strongly. So there is something in there. So just continue. So I was really surprised. I thought devotees would support me. I do have some very close devotees supporting me. I'm not saying, you know. But where I was thinking I'll get the support, I didn't get from some places. But where I didn't expect, you know, Krishna sent me the support. And I'm so much at peace now. Like, you know, my parents, they're not bitter. I was very afraid that, you know, my dad is 82, so I was just thinking how he would respond to that, because he's quite emotional when it comes to his three daughters. But I was surprised. So I feel very grateful to them, you know, for raising me to be a very strong girl, for being there for me the worst phase of my life. So I'm actually very fortunate. I have a wonderful husband, a wonderful son, and a wonderful parents and sisters, and then my devotee family that's been supporting me. So I really feel that there's nothing to really come with. It's temporary, the pain is temporary, and you know, I have to respect that experience I'm going through, because I have to go through that for my own growth. So I feel that I'm very blessed. I'm really very blessed.
That's good. Thankfulness towards your parents. Very nice. Very nice. Okay. Other any of the men? Thankful, grateful, appreciation. This is very important, to appreciate others. I mean, even if you have a, we should be doing this at a GBC meeting, you know, where we go around and appreciate each other, because it really deepens the relationship. And you appreciate the appreciation, not just negate the appreciation. Is anyone else? Yes.
Someone outside. Can it be
someone in the room? Someone in or outside? Yeah.
Gosh, that's so many ideas. I'll pick my spiritual master.
Great.
I have a strong need for understanding why I'm here, what I'm supposed to be doing with my life, and I met some, you know, spiritual people when I was 15, fortunately, and I asked the question, and why am I here? And I was told you won't be able to understand. When I met Maharaj and asked the same question, he actually took the time to answer. And since then, you know, I've got like a compass in my life. And then I was very anti-ISKCON because I didn't know. I didn't know what is this weird thing of white people trying to practice Hinduism. I didn't know what Hinduism was, but you know, it was his character, his non-intrusive nature that brought me closer to the association of devotees. I didn't grow up with the father figure. That was very powerful for me, that I could look up to. The other thing that Maharaj arranged for us was a relationship with Tenapran Prabhu and Mahimataji. While he's not a father figure for me, he was like an older brother. It has been since the last 20 years. Anytime I feel like I need a place to go to share my heart, there is that space.
Wow.
So power of a safe space for me, a power of the power that I received of a goal of life, and most importantly, the fact that I can't even follow properly Krishna consciousness, but there's acceptance, is beautiful. So I'm very grateful for that.
That's very beautiful, isn't it? That's very beautiful. We should record that and send it to Rumapad Maharaj. It is recorded. So you can just take an excerpt out of there and send it to Rumapad Maharaj. And then also being thankful for giving you Nityananda Pran. And also thankfulness towards Nityananda Pran is like an older brother. Wow. So nice to have a support system like that, isn't it? A father image and an older brother, and older sister.
I didn't contribute much in his life.
Well, you're not that old. Nityananda Prabhu is 20 years older than you. You married a much older man. All right. I mean, you can see how powerful thankfulness is or appreciation is. It's just a sample, unless someone else wants to do that. But it's actually one of the most powerful ways to bring people together. And we all have that need. The need to feel that we have contributed to someone. Very important need. So Nityananda Prabhu, when you feel that you contributed to Jamuna Jeevan, and how do you feel about that?
I feel delighted. I feel happy because I grew up as an only child.
Mm-hmm.
And so all my connections are outside family, immediate family.
Mm.
So, I mean, although I grew up happily being a single child, there are times when I can remember a few incidences where I would feel, oh, I wish I had another sibling.
Mm.
And I always found my connections of such familial connections in my friends.
Mm.
And in this particular scenario, you know, he being one of those younger brothers, as he calls me, an older brother, has been very fulfilling for me as well. And I feel grateful that I got a chance to contribute in his journey, because contributing in his journey also fulfilled my own growth in my journey. Mm. So it's not just that I'm doing him a favor or I'm... by his friendship, I've grown too. I may have been there for him, being an older brother voice, but he's been there for me as a friend in many, many, many ways, with words of appreciation, with a very and recently as a strong pillar of support, making some very strong statements and commitments. In fact, his life was supposedly to go in this direction, but it has gone in a complete different direction out of his own choice. But because he stood up for certain principles that are important for him, I see that as support for me.
Mm.
So I'm extremely grateful that you know we have that very strong reciprocal relationship. When I say him, of course, Shri Radhika is very much a part of that as well, since in the talking of this context. So I'm equally grateful for that kind of friendship. And they've done and said, and if I go into this, it will be a long list, but specifically they've said and done so many wonderful things for me particularly and my family in the critical hour of need.
Very wonderful. Whew. Powerful, powerful appreciations. Yes, more appreciations.
Maharaj, yeah, just hearing all these appreciations, it's just opening my heart. I want to take this opportunity to really express my deep gratitude to Vrindavan Prabhu, my husband, for his commitment to take up this empathic communication very deeply and practice, apply. It's so amazing to see his journey. I think I also want to express my gratitude to Guru Maharaj, His Holiness Rampa Swami Maharaj, to recognize this need for all the devotees and arranging that back-to-back 2 years seminar in Gita Nagari. Since then, I have been seeing such a shift in Vrindavan Prabhu. He used to have so much difficulty connection-wise to me or the kids. But something, as this brought the shift, I started appreciating the connection, and also in this process, want to express my gratitude to you. It just moves my heart just thinking of you and how joyful, you know, I always used to question, Krishna says susukam, but it doesn't feel like that. I used to get angry at Krishna. Why are you saying I'm not feeling that? But very thankfully, when I saw you those 2 times, it just like, you know, so much uplifting. And this evening also, I was debating whether to come or not, and Prabhu was planning to come. I said, you know what, I just want that association. I'm very grateful to you for modeling that and for us to experience that. It is actually susukam. I may not be at that stage to appreciate that. And lastly, I want to, but not least, appreciate Shri Radhika Mataji for her commitment to this and doing this reading group. which Renan Prabhu is a very regular participant. And me or kids, we can vouch for this empathic communication, how it can change the lives in an amazing way. Thank you so much.
Wow. Well, and I would like to express my appreciation to Ramapad Maharaj for appreciating the importance of empathic communication, which I don't think any the other, my other godbrothers I haven't got any other calls from any other sannyasis. You know, he reached out to me and asked me to come to Gitanagar, and I said, what for? And he said, you're teaching, you know, this session or that particular summer was about empathy. And he said, you're coming. And then he reached out to me a second summer. He said, usually people don't have me come twice. What's wrong? And so that... And then, so I really appreciate it, and it gave me an opportunity to connect to everyone here. And, you know, just like you're talking, devotee family, I feel like you're all part of my devotee family.
Haribol.
Yeah, so I appreciate that very much. And also I appreciate that I had an opportunity at at least the second summer camp. The first summer camp, he was so busy. The second summer camp, I actually had an opportunity to sit down and talk to him. And sort of expressed my empathy for what happened in New York. You know, we had a long conversation. And I really love, you know, helping, you know, being empathic with people who have, because even as sannyasis, we have things that make us, that are painful to us. So I just love the opportunity to reach out and to empathize with what had happened, because sometimes, you know, you're dealing in ISKCON, like Nityananda Prabhu, Nityananda Pran, experienced, and, you know, people get in such pain, and I have this need to sort of like, I guess, be empathic with people who are in pain, you know, to help. And so, you know, just like when I came here because I felt that there were devotees in pain. Who, you know, because when I heard what had happened, it was just like, And I haven't talked to Nityananda and said, do you want me to do anything to go in there with my fists and beat someone up, you know, and just like have a whole major, you know, because my initial response was, you know, I'm just going to blow the whistle on all those people, you know, and create a big scandal and get justice for you, because I have a need for justice. A need for justice. He said, no. No, I'm happy with where I am. Don't create more problems. Because I was pretty angry like that. So anyway, I just really want to thank Ramapad Maharaj for just bringing me into the situation, and then of course, Nityananda for just being himself. He's always so jolly and everything. And we had so much fun in the Chicago seminar because he and Hemangi just tolerated me making fun of them during the whole seminar. I was using them as a foil. If you remember that seminar. Yeah, it was so much fun, and they were just smiling the whole time. They didn't just run out and say, what kind of sannyasi is this?
It's important for me to have fun. I joke.
It was a lot of joking, and I want to appreciate Hemangi for just being open and honest. I really like that.
Not many people love
it. I mean, just she's just like, what you see is what you get.
I don't know. I have one GBC who is backing me.
I mean,
I'll make a badge back. B. Krishna Maharaj has endorsed my
name. I think
it's true.
I think it's great. I mean, just like, wow. There's no hypocrisy there. It's just like, you are. They're all there, you know. Right in your face, you know.
I've already made a place for me, for myself in the hellish planet.
No, it's just, it's good. It's actually good. I don't find anything wrong. It's just like, wow, we need an open and honest society, and you're an example of how we should be. And I appreciate, you know, I really appreciate, and of course I appreciate all the different types of personalities because I appreciate variety. You know, some people are more shy, some people are more open. And it's just like different colored flowers, basically. It's just beautiful to see that, you know, the variety of devotees. We're not just like one, like cookie cutter type of devotee, you know, like cookie cutters, you know, come out of a stamp. It's not, but not like the clone army in Star Wars. You ever seen Star Wars? It's just, you know, it's beautiful. It's just beautiful seeing everybody. I want to thank everybody for being themselves. All right. Anything else? Should we end? Yes. Yes, sure.
It's appreciation for someone in this room, Maharaj.
Yeah.
I always think I really like got into the empathic communication learning, you know, very deeply, like really chewed everything like that, I think. I also have a lot of appreciation for your book so much, so I got a lot of them, you know, in the anticipation of, you know, sharing it with the local community because I do book distribution. But my personality is not like very connecting or, you know, although I have appreciation, I never, you know, reached out to you or talked with you or connected with you. So I want to appreciate your Shri Radhika Mataji. She really, like, you know, kind of, I say, forced me to join the teaching seminar.
That I did, yes.
You forced them.
And also, she's also the reason for us to be here today and yesterday.
Good.
So I want to thank her for making connection with you. I feel happy and contented. I can do whatever I want now on your mind.
Oh my God.
In a sense, like, I mean,
right.
Because I don't care.
Yeah.
Just want to thank her for that, Maharaj.
Very nice. That's very good. And I also want to thank you and your wife for being so tolerant during the seminar, because I did tease you a lot. You were both teased, and it was teasing you about your relationship because you were in different locations during a lot of the times during the training session. And you have a good sense of humor. I really appreciate the sense of humor that everyone has. Isn't it? We had a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, a lot of, you know, joking and fun, and nobody took offense, even though I was offensive, but... All right, so should we end now? I guess it's prasad of everybody, yes. Except for me.
Can you come back again?
Sometime. Yeah, sure.
Are you all?
Yeah, we can come back in the future. Yeah, I like the community here. Yeah, it's very nice. It's very nice, loving, you know, warm community. So we can come back and have some more fun. And then go bicycling again with That was fun. Okay, so it's time for prasadam for everybody? Except nobody makes prasadam for me, but that's all right. No, no. Oh, you have a birthday cake?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a birthday now.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's have a birthday party. We can go offline now first. But. Okay, thank you all for joining us. Yeah.